A man shouting Heil Hitler, Heil Trump at a performance of Fiddler on the Roof in Baltimore. A man arrested after promising the synagogue shooting was a dry run for things to come. The FBI says hate crimes surged by 17% this year, driven by racial and anti-Semitic attacks. It's happening everywhere and increasingly in schools. We're going to hear now from two educators in Reading, Massachusetts, where police have been investigating 34 incidents throughout the town since May of last year. Among them, racist graffiti scrawled in three local schools. Kathleen Boynton is the principal of Reading Memorial High School, and John Doherty is the school district superintendent. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much, Lulu.
Thank you.
Kathleen, I'm going to start with you. When we say racist graffiti, tell me what that means.
So there were incidents of graffiti targeting our African-American population, as well as our LGBTQ population and our Jewish population.
And these sort of popped up all over the school. Did it seem like it was concerted?
It did not seem concerted. We think they are certainly an isolated group of students. I don't think they are connected events. And it was in various places, so bathroom stalls, walls, desks, as well as stairwells.
Have there been any leads from the police yet about who might be doing these things?
You know, in most cases, we have not. In fact, in all cases, we have not had any leads or suspects.
What's been the reaction from the student body?
The students are angry. They're hurt. They're scared. You know, they feel powerless in the face of these hateful acts. And so it's partly our job as educators to help them feel supported and to feel empowered to stand up against these acts of hate.
John, can you just give me a sense of the makeup of Reading and the demographic breakdown of your schools there?
Sure. So we're a suburban community just north of Boston. Primarily, our demographics are white. And we do have a small minority of African-American, Asian population as well. But predominantly, we're a white community.
So this is to both Kathleen and John. And Kathleen, we can start with you. We've seen a photo circulate in the last few weeks of mostly white boys in a Wisconsin high school giving the Nazi salute in a school photo. A lot of these racist attacks are often tied to white nationalist groups or people who have been exposed to white nationalist propaganda, and they tend to be men or boys who are white. Is there a specific conversation that we should be having with young men who are more susceptible to this kind of racist propaganda?
I think it's important to talk to all students and talk with all students around issues of race and diversity. We held our first ever and hopefully first of many courageous conversations around race and diversity last week with students. And I think that's the conversation that we need to have with all of our students.
We've also brought in several times Holocaust survivor Anna Ornstein, who has come and talked to the students about the types of things that happened in Nazi Germany in the 30s and 40s and how we can't let that repeat now.
John, I have to say, hearing this, when something like this happens, a lot of people ask is, it's great that you're doing this now, but why hasn't this been part of the curriculum before? Why haven't kids been learning about the Holocaust in school? Why haven't they heard about lynchings and segregation and the violence of hate? Why does it take these incidents to sort of bring this conversation to the forefront?
I think it's a great question. I don't want people to walk away thinking that we weren't doing these things in the past. We did Holocaust units prior to this time. I think we have now become more aware of what is going on. And I think also we are reacting in some ways to what is happening in our society and how, as public school educators, we need to prepare our students better. We have to adjust our curriculum so that we can better prepare our students. So we did do some things before, but I think we've now enhanced the things to make them even better.
John Doherty is the superintendent of Reading, Massachusetts Public Schools, and Kathleen Boynton is the principal of Reading Memorial High School. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News. Idra Novi has written a story about power. It's called Those Who Knew, and it begins in the aging port city of an unnamed island nation 10 years after the fall of a brutal regime. The main characters are Lena, a professor, and Victor, a senator. He's a rising star in his party, a potential presidential candidate. They meet as student activists, planning marches and throwing Molotov cocktails, trying to bring about the end of the dictatorship. And they begin a relationship. Victor is charming and progressive, but he's also complicated.
He sees himself as a victim of the regime that happened to his country, and he had an uncle who was killed by the regime. So in many ways, he is a victim. But that doesn't mean that he can't also victimize somebody else.
Like Lena, whose family was complicit in the regime.
The power dynamic between Lena and Victor starts in college when he is the charismatic leader in this student movement. And she recognizes that her family puts her in a vulnerable position in the resistance among the students. And Victor leverages her shame and he leverages her sense of complicity to silence her when he loses control in an argument that they have in the basement.
That argument ended with Victor choking Lena until she passed out. Years later, as she's watched Victor become a public figure and gain power, Lena remains silent and conflicted.
And I think this happens with many victims of assault. They wonder what their silence will mean for others. And I think often when someone who has been pushed into silence about assault, as in Lena's case, because of the sense of shame she feels and her fear of retaliation, that she finally feels this strong urge to speak up to protect somebody else.
Like Maria P. That's another woman with ties to Victor. She's eventually found dead, hit by a bus. And that's when Lena begins to suspect murder and has to weigh the pros and the cons of finally speaking out about her violent past with Victor.
Everyone has to do that math for themselves of who will benefit from coming forward with some kind of a testimony and how may it put you in an even more vulnerable position. And I think that math changes with time.
Lena isn't the only person who has a story she could tell about Victor. The book is called Those Who Knew, after all. Eventually, and we won't say how, Victor's behavior does catch up with him. And when it does, it is confusing because Victor is violent, he's a bully, he's a shady politician, but he also has some genuinely good intentions. He's the only politician in his nation who wants to reduce the cost of education.
And it's very hard to reconcile those two things, that someone can publicly be doing something good and privately be doing something depraved, and how to hold those two things at once. But that's the story that I think happens with Victor, and we've certainly seen that play out with lots of politicians in our own country.
Idrinova began writing this novel years before Me Too and the conversations around sexual harassment. She says this story came from a personal place.
I think the issue for me is not my individual experience. It is the issue of how many women have had these experiences. And I think this issue of people silenced after assault isn't just prevalent here. It's prevalent all over the world. And I think that was one of the reasons why I wanted to set this novel in this unnamed country, to show what it's like to live with silence after assault, how it can derail your whole life, was something that seemed like I could work it out within the world of a novel.
Idrinovi's new novel is Those Who Knew.